It's time for Dodger Baseball.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
I've needed you far more than you needed me.
Vin Scully joining me here on the Rich Eisen Show.
My achievements have really been the achievements of others.
Montana throwing in the end zone. She is gone!
Today's guests, host of Peacock's Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, United States President's Cup captain, Davis Love III, legendary broadcaster, Bob Costas, Colts defensive tackle, DeForest Buckner. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Yes, it is. Welcome to this edition of the Rich Eisen Show here in Los Angeles, California. I am your humble host sitting here on the set year of the Rich Eisen Show on NBC Sports on Peacock and NBC Sports Audio Sirius XM Channel 85. Pleased to be here with you on this Rich Eisen Show terrestrial radio affiliate or the Odyssey app or YouTube.com/Rich Eisen Show for anything that you're going to miss over the next 3 hours or our podcast version. We always appreciate anybody taking in this show whenever they darn well please, which you can do with our podcast available thanks to those at the Cumulus Podcast Network. Good to see you over there, Christopher Brockman. How are you,
sir? Hey, Rich, I'm great. How are you?
Mike Del Tufo is in his chair. Good to see you too as well, DJ Mikey D. And light the candles, sir. Good to see you, TJ Jefferson. Good to see you. You got
to
do
it. It's late, and it's good to be seen.
Yes, yes, yes.
Rich, it takes a bit of time.
To realize when you've got control of your own microphone.
Well, like, you know, I turned it off learn. Real quick because you could always hear me clicking the bic here.
It's so okay. I went to like,
I thought it annoyed you. So that's why I went to turn it off.
It's called setting an ambiance.
Yeah.
We don't what you're doing, you're setting an ambiance.
I just wasn't trying to annoy you with it.
I appreciate that. So joining us here in about 18 minutes time is Mike Florio. He's going to take a little victory lap because he's the one who was telling us all about, hey, Tom Brady retired from football. Without saying retirement, because he had an interest in maybe joining the Miami Dolphins front office and potentially playing quarterback for them for Sean Payton to be his head coach. And everybody's like, what? Ben Volen, I believe, of the Boston Globe was talking about that as well. And everyone's like, what? Well, the commissioner, upon hearing that, said, what? And they looked into it, and the Dolphins got smacked down pretty hard, as did the owner of the Dolphins yesterday by the NFL. Who are also waiting to hear from on the Deshaun Watson front. Are they going to appeal themselves, I guess? Are they going to try and keep the suspension ball up in the air for Deshaun Watson and the Cleveland Browns? Mike Florio will join us shortly. DeForest Buckner of the Indianapolis Colts will be joining us on this program, one of our favorites to talk to, the Oregon Duck, by way of also San Francisco, now in Indianapolis, where Matt Ryan plies his craft. He will join us. Davis Love III is going to join us because he's got something to say about the LIV Tour and about his love of the PGA Tour. And we have some questions about the PGA Tour jacking up their prize money to be more than the LIV Tour. And isn't that why the LIV Tour said they started, is to try and get the PGA Tour's attention? The question is, though, if you join the LIV Tour, you can't go back to the PGA Tour.
No backsies.
No backsies. Yeah, you took your finger off that piece, huh?
Yeah, no backsies.
So Davis Love III will join us, and Bob Costas will join us in the final hour to talk about what we're about to lead this show with. Start this show by remembering an all-time great, Vin Scully, passing away last night at the age of 94. What a life in full this man led, and so much of it in our living rooms. And providing the words to the pictures we saw on television, or for so many here in Los Angeles, California, painting the word picture for you as the radio voice and then simulcast voice of Los Angeles Dodgers baseball. The great Vin Scully, who I first heard about from my parents, who I can maybe count on one hand the number of times I talked sports with my dad as a kid. He really wasn't into it that much. And the same thing with my mom. It was my brother who got me into sports. But my parents, being from Brooklyn, New York, told me all about Vin Scully. And that's part of Vin's incredible story. 1950, is when he began calling games for the Los Angeles Dodgers, Brooklyn Dodgers, Dodgers organization. So when he started calling games for the Dodgers and calling games for people, Vin Scully broadcast for 67 years.
Wow.
He could tell you stories about Jackie Robinson because he was there when Jackie Robinson was there. He tells stories that you could see all over Twitter and all over social media and YouTube, like skating on ice skates in a race with Jackie Robinson. He called a perfect game for Sandy Koufax and a no-hitter for Clayton Kershaw. He called so many great moments nationally because NBC Sports and CBS Sports found out about the guy who was calling all those games for the Dodgers. And like, let's get Vin in front of a national audience. And that's when I first got to know him. Being a man of 53 years old now, that's when I first got to know Vin Scully in the 80s when he was calling games every single week for NBC. When he was calling games in the World Series. When he was calling some of the greatest moments of all time. Like Kirk Gibson's home run in Game 1 of the 1988 World Series. When everybody...
And look who's coming up. And with two out, you talk about a roll of the dice. This is it. High fly ball into right field. She is gone! In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
Yep. I have goosebumps. How about you?
Yeah, jeez. Whew, head to toe.
And that was 2 years after we thought he had made the greatest call of his entire professional career, calling baseball games nationally, coast to coast. Sorry, Chris, but this is it. The Buckner play. Game 6 of the 1986 World Series when it looked like the Red Sox were going to break the curse and they had the Mets dead to rights. Until the Mets started a comeback and Mookie Wilson stepped to the plate.
So the winning run is at second base with two out, 3-2 to Mookie Wilson. Little roller up along first, behind the bag, it gets through Buckner. Here comes Knight and the Mets win it.
Here comes Knight and the Mets win it. And bets by Buckner behind the bag. I've got goosebumps again.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, if we had played that a little bit longer and had the time to do it, because we will have so much to talk about Vin here, you'll hear one thing after another with his calls is the sense of meeting the moment with his voice and then shutting up. And letting you see the moment and feel the moment and hear the crowd and then come back in with something else to say. Like he said at the end of the Gibson home run. And also for the catch. Yes, Vin Scully called one of the most seminal moments in the history of the National Football League as well. Calling football games for CBS Sports. He was in the booth. In Candlestick Park on January 10th, 1982, the NFC Championship game of the 81 season, 49ers and Cowboys. Yes, kids, when we talk about the 49ers and Cowboys having a long-standing rivalry, this is the day it essentially was born, when the 49ers finally hit back on the Dallas Cowboys with Tom Landry and the Cowboys up. And Joe Montana taking the snap on 3rd and 3 from the 6-yard line.
They're 6 yards away from Pontiac. 3rd and 3.
We'll see a pickup sometime on the right side, possibly.
Montana looking, throwing in the end zone. It's
It's a madhouse at Candlestick with 51 seconds left. Dwight Clark is 6'4". He stands about 10 feet tall in this crowd's estimation.
Meeting the moment,
wow.
Being quiet, enhancing the moment. It's so simple sounding, right? Not everyone can do it. And certainly nobody ever did it like Vin Scully or does it now. Even Al Michaels calls him the greatest to ever do it. Called Masters moments. He called so many moments. And nobody. And I think everyone else who calls games in baseball for a living, nobody could perfectly broadcast the game and the pace of the game and spin a yarn in between pitches like Vin Scully. The stories he would tell while calling games, it's what you love about baseball when you sit there with your friend or your mom or your dad or your grandparent and you're just in between pitches and you turn and you tell a story. You know what happened to me today? You know, or you know what happened to that guy? I remember I saw that guy play baseball, you know, 5 years ago in this game. And you tell stories and Vin would tell you stories and you'd be completely enwrapped by them. Nobody will ever do this again, because I found this out when I first moved here to Los Angeles. And you move here to L.A. and you talk about sports. Certainly when I moved here in L.A. Back in 2003, and Susie was here years before that, and my brother was here years before that. So I've been coming to Los Angeles for, you know, and living here and also coming to Los Angeles for almost 30 plus years now. And everyone, the first person when you start talking about sports would say, oh, you got to listen to Vin call a game. I'm like, well, no, I listened to, I mean, I have the Buckner moment and the Gibson moment and all these moments. No. You got to listen inning 1 through 9. You got to get the whole thing. And there's nobody like it. And you're driving around in traffic and you're just staring at the taillights and you're just saying, what the hell's the matter with this 405? What the hell's the matter? You turn on the game and Vin just, okay, I don't have to be where I think I need to be. You're happy stuck in traffic listening to that guy. And nobody will ever do this again. And anybody who watched Dodger baseball knows this. The Dodgers would come back from commercial break in the middle of the game, of the fourth or the fifth inning, a minute, 90 seconds early. In other words, foregoing advertising revenue. Just so Vin can turn his back to the field and his face to the camera and tell a story for 60, 90 seconds and then turn around and then here we go. Let's go. Top of the fifth, bottom of the fifth, whatever. You won't see that anymore. Ever again. Ever again. I don't even know if I'm doing this man justice. But I'm trying my best. Because I will tell my kids about him. They kind of heard that he retired in 2016. I'll tell my kids about him, just like my parents told me about him. And yeah, people might be fortunate to do it for 67 years.
Wow.
Somebody might match that, but the 67 years, you know, starting in the Jackie Robinson era, mm-hmm. you know, and finishing up in the late teens of the 21st century and spanning that era. Oh, by the way, he called Henry Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's record. He was there because the Dodgers were the team that Hank Aaron did it against. And he met that moment too.
Aaron waiting, the outfield deep and straight away. Fastball is a high drive into deep left center field. Buckner goes back to the fence. It is gone. What a marvelous moment for baseball. What a marvelous moment for Atlanta and the state of Georgia. What a marvelous moment for the country and the world. A black man is getting a standing ovation in the deep South for breaking a record of an all-time baseball idol. And it is a great moment for all of us, and particularly for Henry Aaron.
Vin Scully, may you rest in peace, and thank you for doing what you did in the manner in which you did it, in meeting all those moments for us in the way we needed it. And years later and forevermore, cherish it. A guy who many of us wanted to meet, and fortunate I got a couple chances to do it. He called into this show, and many wanted to meet, and for those who never did, you knew him. Rest in peace, Vin Scully. We'll talk about it with Bob Costas in hour number three of this program. You can call in as well. You want to tell stories? Let's do it. That's what this is about. 844-204-RICH. Please call. Let's talk stories. That's what he did for us. Let's do it for him in his memory. 844-204-RICH if you'd like to do it. Deebo Samuel spoke yesterday. Bill Belichick spoke today. He was asked about the Dolphins tampering with Tom Brady while he was still with the Patriots. His answer is indeed today's moment in Bill Belichick press conference history, if you will. He will be, you don't want to miss that. Mike Florio, though, when we come back, let's talk some ball with Mike Florio, 844-204-RICH, number to dial. I believe Mike's already in Canton, Ohio, so I'll be seeing him shortly. The host of Peacock's PFT Live and the author of Playmakers, Mike Florio, when we come back. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in store. And now save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH, number to dial. Chrome Soft, the golf ball that I use when I play golf for my friends at Callaway. It's sitting out there for you to use, and trust me, you will love it. It actually feels different hitting this golf ball, and I have no feel when I hit anything, usually, but I do now. The regular Chrome Soft, designed for the widest range of golfers who want better feel, more distance, incredible forgiveness. If you're looking for more workability, there's a Chrome Soft for you. It's called Chrome Soft X Tour Level Short Game Control. Finally, this Chrome Soft XLS gives you a lower spin on longer shots, firmer feel, but still a high spin around the greens. And now every Chrome Soft is ready to roll for you because they're all enhanced with precision technology, which uses design techniques and manufacturing specifications up to 1/1000th of an inch. This ensures they're the highest quality, most consistent, fastest golf balls available. When you add it all up, it's so simple. Chrome Soft is better for the best and better for everyone. Find out which Chrome Soft is right for you at CallawayGolf.com/ChromeSoft. 844-204-RICH is the number to dial here on the program. Chris Brockman, is there any poll question you might have in mind today? I know I'm kind of throwing you a curveball on this sort of thing, but what are you thinking over there? Anything on that front? No. I'm just trying to.
We want to do, should we do Vin's best moment of the ones we played
before?
Yeah,
I think that's a good one. I think that's a really good one.
All right, so we had, hold on, which ones do we? We had the catch. We had Gibson's home run.
Buckner moment.
We and had then Buckner.
And then Aaron. The Hank Aaron home run.
There you go.
If you do that, and how about that, by the way? The home run that Aaron hit that Scully called, the left fielder the ball went over was Bill Buckner.
Because he played for the Dodgers at the beginning of his career.
Oof.
You know.
And 12 years, that's kind of like the baseball gods kind of winking at you right there,
it's
right?
Going. Oof.
So. Uh-huh. You want to do that?
Yeah, I'm putting it up right now. So what's your favorite of Vin Scully's legendary calls? The catch, Gibson's home run, Buckner 86 series, or Aaron's record breaker?
Rich, we were talking about how great these guys were solo in the booth. And Vin doing what he did.
Yeah, you don't hear that too much anymore, right?
No. Even in radio, a lot of the guys, we were saying, because I love Brockman's crew from New England. They're amazing. Like, I listen to them on the radio, on NFL, you know, when I'm driving. It's like some guys, like, they all have another guy in them, with them. They all have a color commentator with them. Play-by-play in a color in the booth. It's amazing to know that Vin, how great he was. It's like, he's just one of the many.
Right.
Solo guys.
Plus, we know baseball games can take 4 hours, you know, and if it's a blowout, you're just trying to kill time. So, to fill the air with the stories, that's what, you know, a unique skill.
Okay, let's head to the phone lines. Mike Florio is going to be calling in a moment. Nick in Irvine, California. Go for it, Nick. You're on the Rich Eisen Show.
Hey, well, listen, I'm 55. And so I grew up with Enberg and Drysdale and Scully and Hearn. And people don't realize, Lakers, Dodgers in the 70s when I was practicing basketball 8 hours a day, shooting hoops with my little radio next to the court, that they only had 40, 50 games a year on TV, okay? So every other game you had to listen to on the radio. And that meant Vin. So Vin was my summers. Vin was my childhood. And Vin, I ended up being a professional writer. And I think a lot of it was that imagination when I'm like 7, 8, 9 years old, just throwing up thousands of jumpers a day, practicing, listening to the pregame, listening to the postgame. Vin was all over it with his. He was just a poet laureate. Like, he would have done what he did as a Dodger. He would have done it if he was in Greece back in the day. He would have done it with the balladeers of the 15th century. Okay. He was just that superb at what he did. And then to combine his reputation, which was of the nicest guy. So this is – he was Dodger fans' Dodger number one. If you take a poll, put up a poll, who's the greatest Dodger of all time, it was Vin Scully. He never took an at-bat. He never threw a pitch. Greatest Dodger ever. Thank you, Vin.
Thank you for the recollection, Nick. Greatly appreciated here on the Rich Eisen Show. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Daryl in Raleigh, North Carolina, calling in about Vin. What's up, Daryl?
Hey, Rich. Appreciate you giving me the opportunity to share some memory. I grew up in upstate New York and grew up as a Mets fan. My grandparents lived in southern Pennsylvania during the summertime, and in the wintertime would winter in Vero Beach, Florida, which is where the Dodgers had their spring camp. So they were huge Dodgers fans. And I remember visiting my grandparents during the summer. We used to sit in their screened-in porch, and they'd watch Dodger games every day. And I remember sitting there watching those with them. And now, up until this today, anytime I hear Vin Scully's voice, it throws me back there to, you know, being a little kid in the late 70s, early 80s. And being a Mets fan, I was namesake, loved Daryl Strawberry. One year they came back from Florida, gave me a signed poster from Daryl Strawberry, and they'd bring balls and things. But just want to share that. Always hearing Vin Scully's voice. You kind of mentioned it earlier. You know, if you're driving on the highway, it was so calming and comfortable that he would just make you feel part of the game
And it was always, even if he was calling a current game, it almost felt like memories.
Daryl, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. That's Daryl in North Carolina. We all have these memories. And please call 844-204-RICH, number to dial. We'll take them as you, as you're willing to give them. And Bob Costas will join us in hour number three to talk about Vin Scully. Joining us now on the Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line from Canton, Ohio, where the Pro Football Hall of Fame game is tomorrow night on NBC. And the Hall of Fame ceremony, you can catch it on NFL Network at noon Eastern time. I'll be sitting there on the set hosting it in Canton, Ohio on Saturday. Joining us on that Mercedes-Benz Vans phone line, Pro Football Talk, and our friend Mike Florio back here on the show. How you doing, Mike?
Rich, my deepest apologies. I have been a loyal Sprint customer since 2006 when they became the first primary sponsor of PFT, and I have been too loyal because they are now no longer Sprint, and I need to put a new SIM card in my cell phone for it to work. So I can't take or receive phone calls, so I had to go old school.
Wow.
Hotel, I'm surprised they still have phones in hotel rooms.
They do. I'm glad they do.
And they work, although this looks like the original phone that was installed when they built this hotel, whenever that may have been. Anyway, first world problems.
No, it's all good, man.
A cell phone that does not take or receive phone calls.
Sprint is now called Marathon. Who knew? Okay, very good. Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. Well, all right. It's time for a victory lap, Michael. Congratulations on a story that you've been telling us about for months. And Roger Goodell, I guess, have you ever had the commissioner confirm one of your stories, Mike? Has that ever happened before?
No, this is a first. No, this is absolutely a first. Although everybody I thought knew about it. I don't know why the major networks were staying away from it, but Sims and I were Chris Sims, who co-hosts PFT Live with me 4 days a week, he and I were both hearing things throughout the month of February. And I got to a point on a Friday night late in the month where he and I were texting. It's like, you know, I want to really try to position this for something we can use on the show Monday morning. And I actually did responsible reporting, seeking out the teams for comment and, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, you know, we got something here. We got something here. And then as time went by, because we were very careful how we couched it at first, that just basically the Dolphins were interested in trying to get Peyton and Brady. As time went by, it became clear to me that it was a done deal, that Brady, who retired on Tuesday, February 1, the following week was going to be named a minority owner of the Dolphins. At some point after that, Sean Payton was going to be named the head coach of the Dolphins. At some point after that, in the spring, Tom Brady was going to become the quarterback of the Dolphins. It was all set up. It was all going to happen. And before they could flick the first domino, on the same day Tom Brady retired, Brian Flores files his lawsuit and blows it all up.
But the question I have on all that is if, well, I guess not if, I mean the commissioner in the league says this happened, when they reached out to Brady in 2019 and then again in 2021 to talk about all of this or try and lay the groundwork for it, and when they called Sean Payton's agent, Don Yee, who is also, you know, associated with Brady, to start this conversation, how did they think it would be received with them just saying, look who the new quarterback and part owner of the Dolphins is. Look who the new coach is. Wouldn't the Saints and Bucks say, hold on a second? Like, at what point did the brazenness have a cover story in their minds, Mike?
Well, because this may be the reason why, Rich, people have asked me why didn't the Patriots, the Saints, or the Buccaneers get any compensation as part of this tampering violation? Because in the past, in some instances, the victims get something. They get flip-flop of draft pick order, whatever the case may be, they get something. I think in this case, and I know, for this to have all been set up and be done, at the highest levels of these organizations, Dolphins and Saints, there was a deal for Peyton. Highest levels of the Dolphins and Bucks, there was a deal for Brady. It's just a matter of it playing out. So, yes, it was brazen. Yes, it was blatant. But they also had everything set up and ready to go. Just like when Sean Payton was going to be coach of the Cowboys in early 2019. It was all set up and ready to go. And just before they started the process, it blew up. You start the process by the Cowboys creating a vacancy. Now, the Dolphins already had a head coaching vacancy. And Peyton had already resigned from the Saints. And I wonder, Rich, Would either of those things have happened if they'd known they weren't going to get Peyton? Would Peyton have stayed with the Saints for another year if he didn't think he was going to land in Miami? And would the Dolphins have kept Flores if they knew that they weren't going to get Sean Payton?
Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. The thing that I'm kind of surprised about, and I use the word surprised, I do, is that Brady's receiving blowback in certain parts for this. I mean, what's he supposed to do? Say, call the NFL police that he's being reached out to, that he's being tampered with? Certainly when, you know, obviously, if you remember in 2019, it was the summer where Brady was essentially told the contract that he was looking for or the money he was looking for that would keep him in New England wasn't coming. What's he supposed to do? Hang the phone up and not listen? I mean, I don't understand that. Right?
Well, and it's a great point. And look, he's completely beyond the bubble of any potential discipline here because it would be a union issue and there's no policy in place for being the one who is tampered
with.
Right. And there's no rule that says you can't be somebody that a team impermissibly talks to. But I think from a PR standpoint, and look at the timeline, and look at, like, as late as early December, or what was it? I can't remember how they worded it, but it would happen in December of 2021 while they're making the push toward the end of the regular season, and he's with the Bucs, and he's supposedly all in with the Bucs, and he's talking to the Dolphins then. That's the kind of thing that Buccaneers fans should probably say, well, what the hell? I mean, are you focused on trying to win with us? What are you doing here? Why are you trying to set up your next gig while we're trying to finish this year with another Super Bowl win? And to be talking to the Dolphins in 2019 and 2020 while he's still doing business with the Patriots, I just think it's a bad look. Sims made the point today, you know, how will he be received in the locker room? Will he get the side eye from any of his teammates? And I think because he's Tom Brady, he won't.
Right.
But I think it is fair to say, how all in are you with your current effort to try to cap the season with a Super Bowl win if you're allowing yourself to be distracted by who you're going to be playing for next year?
I don't know if he's distracted though, Mike. I'll bite on that. I think he can compartmentalize and win and want to win because he just, you know, winning is everything. That he can still, you know, focus on the task at hand while his agent is handling what could come next. Certainly, if it's ownership, right? I mean, does that? I mean, I don't know. Now you got to do the math. The money that Fox is going to pay him to broadcast, is that more than what he could make as an owner of a team? You'd have to feel that's the case. I'm wondering, like, what does he really want to do with his career?
Well, it depends when he's done. On how big the percentage is.
Right.
Frankly, and also, he was coming to Miami to ultimately play, not just to be a minority owner. And here's the other side of it, too. Let's not be naive. This isn't the only time this happens. This happens all the time.
I was going to ask that.
With all sorts of players.
Yeah.
You think Russell Wilson and his agent Mark Rogers had no conversations with the Broncos during the 2021 season? Do you think that didn't happen? Right? I mean, and I think that's one of the reasons why the punishment of the Dolphins wasn't as much as it should have been. When you look at the words of the commissioner, the severity and scope, unprecedented, owner directly involved. I've never encountered that in all my years of the NFL. Well, why is it just what it is then? Why isn't it more? Because it happens all the time. It happens casually. It happens nonchalantly. The Bucs did it with Brady, Bruce Arians, at a press conference talking to reporters at the combine in 2020. While Brady is still under contract with the Patriots, Aaron says they're interested in Brady. Textbook blatant violation of the tampering rules, but the NFL doesn't care. The NFL ignores 99.999% of the tampering violations, and then every once in a while, we're going to enforce the rule. And going forward, like, are people going to be scared straight by this? Probably not, because I think people understand, in this case, I don't think they believe they could punish Stephen Ross for tanking because of the implications of doing so. So we had to get him for something. So we'll get him for this.
Well, I mean, I guess tampering will be hammered down on if it's put in a lawsuit that you did it. You know, I guess that you can't ignore it if that is what you're saying, that the league, it was put right there in Brian Flores' lawsuit. What happens with Flores' lawsuit right now? Now that we know that part of it what he alleged on a boat, even without naming Tom Brady, flat out happened. So what happens now with that lawsuit, Mike Florio? What do you think?
That lawsuit continues to be bogged down, Rich, on the preliminary question of whether or not it's going to play out in court or whether it's going to be diverted to the NFL's in-house arbitration system, where the commissioner makes the final decision and it all happens in secrecy. And obviously the scales of justice that are supposed to be perfectly even are tilted in favor of the NFL because the commissioner is the one who's making the decision. And as of right now, there's a pending effort by Flores's lawyers to be able to take discovery, get information, question the commissioner about his true bias, how much money he's making, how the NFL owners have viewed him, that kind of thing, so they can then argue he can't be impartial in any way, shape, or form in controversies involving the teams that have hired him to be the commissioner. It's amazing to me because this issue has been hiding in plain sight for as long as I've been covering the NFL. The commissioner serving as arbitrator for certain claims made against teams. Of course the commissioner can't be fair. The commissioner has, as one party, the people who employ him, and as the other party, people who don't. It's an inherent bias that no one should be expected to even try to shake. So I think it's going to be caught up in that issue for months to come, and it's going to take months/years for this case to ever get resolved.
Mike Florio here on the Rich Eisen Show. Before I let you go on with your Canton day, sir, what's happening with the league's decision to appeal Sue Robinson's 6-game suspension for Watson or leave it the way it is?
Rich, I expect an appeal to be filed before the deadline. Whenever the specific deadline is, I think they're going to file it. And I think what they're going to do, because Judge Robinson made findings of fact, and those are the only things that she does that are binding on the commissioner. Those findings of fact are he did it. And that gives the commissioner everything he could want or need to say, I appreciate your decision to suspend him 6 games. I disagree with it. I'm going to suspend him for the whole season, or whatever he chooses to do. I think she's given him the blueprint, the roadmap, and the green light to do whatever he wants to do on appeal. I expect the appeal to happen, and I expect the suspension to be increased, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was the full season because that's what they asked for. That's what the people who worked for Roger Goodell went into the hearing before Judge Robinson and requested. Why would they change their minds a month later? People need to get ready for this because at a minimum, it's going up. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's a full season.
And if it is, the Players Association's next move would be to do what?
File a lawsuit in federal court. Then it becomes a race to the courthouse. And we've seen this before. Ezekiel Elliott filed his lawsuit a little bit too early and initially won in Texas, but then lost because he filed it too early. See, the NFL's got a great system set up here because they won the Tom Brady case. They won the Ezekiel Elliott case. All the NFL has to do is file its own lawsuit in federal court in New York City before Deshaun Watson would file his lawsuit wherever, in Ohio or wherever he would file it. And when you know when the decision is going to become final from the commissioner, I mean, they control the starter's pistol in the race to the courthouse. So you send the kid down to the courthouse, he's ready to file the paperwork. You text him that the commissioner finalized his decision. Boom, you file the lawsuit. You win the race to the courthouse. You're in a favorable form. I won't bore anyone with the details as to why it's favorable, but it is. And then the NFL wins. And, Rich, at the end of the day, judges don't like to get involved when labor and management have come up with a procedure for resolving complaints like this. And the union agreed that the commissioner has final say. What can you do? What can you do? The union agreed to it. So even though he's not the guy who's judge and jury, he still is the appeals court, and the appeals court's always the most powerful of any of the people in the overall process.
But you can get a temporary restraining order to put Deshaun Watson on the field week 1, right, while this whole thing plays out. That is the rub there.
No, I don't think
that'll
happen, though, Rich, because they're not fighting the 6-game suspension. I think this is a week 7 question. It's an excellent point, great instincts, and I've poked around on this.
I've been around.
I think if they would go to court, they've already conceded the first 6 games. This is week 7 at Baltimore.
Because that's what Brady did, didn't he? Didn't he do that? Or who did that? Somebody.
Brady was facing 4 games from week 1.
Right.
Brady delayed it a whole year because he initially won in court, but he lost at the appeals level. And
right.
The precedent from that case is what gets used against Watson if the NFL wins the race to the courthouse. But because Judge Robinson already has found a six-game suspension, and unless the NFLPA appeals that, and they've already said they won't, I don't think any of this becomes relevant until week seven.
What if Goodell,
even if they fight in court?
What if Goodell just doubles it, goes to 12? Would the Players Association sue on that? Like, what I'm saying is what increase of penalty would you think the Players Association accept? None?
I think the reporting from Charles Robinson a few weeks ago was if it's full season, they'll go to court. It's a great question, though. If it's 14, if it's 12, if it's 10, will they exercise their prerogative to go to court? That's a great question. I don't know the answer to that.
Yes.
But I would assume there's a number short of 17 that would cause them to say, let's not reinforce the bad precedent that we already have in New York and in the appeals court that controls New York that makes it harder for us to win if and when we ever have to take these cases to court. Maybe they just step aside and take it. But you're right. There's a number between 6 and 17 where they quite possibly would say, we just want this to be over, and we're not going to spend the time because at the end of the day, they're probably going to lose anyway.
Mike Florio, greatly appreciate it. Hope to see you in Canton. I think housekeeping was trying to get in during this conversation.
They were.
Okay,
they
you
were,
go,
and
you go
I'm
do that.
I'm surprised they didn't come in.
It's called Do Not Disturb, man.
Yeah, that wasn't an issue.
They don't have a they got a phone from the Kennedy administration, but not a Do Not Disturb sign for you to hang on the door.
No, there is no Do Not Disturb sign
what?
Either.
Oh my God!
I don't want to shame publicly.
No, don't. You're already in trouble with your phone carrier. Don't do that.
All right.
Thanks, Mike. I hope to
I
see you shortly.
I don't have to worry about a Sprint sponsorship anymore. They're dead.
Thanks, man. That's Mike Florio right here. I love talking to him, man. All right, we'll take a break. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Davis Love the Third is going to join us in about 15 minutes' time. You don't want to miss that conversation. That'll be coming up.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the show for those listening on terrestrial radio. We just played a segment of Kevin Costner here in 2018. By the way, to promote the upcoming series Yellowstone that he was starring. Remember that? We're like, he's doing television?
Yeah, right.
Right. Oh, yes. Not just television, but a show that has lit up television, including right here on Peacock, which is where Susie and I are catching up on the series right now. And telling the story about Vin Scully calling the action of Billy Chappell in Love of the Game, for Love of the Game, which was the movie that Costner made, essentially, and wrote and starred in, called For Love of the Game. And had he called the big finish of the movie, and they wrote things out for Vin to do, and Vin says, can I just see what you got? Just play the film for me. And they played 6 minutes, the final six minutes. And he just off the top of his head called the action. Like, you play what you've got.
Right.
I will do what I do for a living, which was look at the action and describe it. And it was perfect, according to Costner. And the director then does what directors do, which is, we have one for safety. Can we try it again? And Scully says, do we have to? All right. And Costner said the way he describes his story, he's just like, oh God, I can't even look at Vin. Like he's telling, the director's asking the all-time great to try it one more shot. And he apparently did a little bit better at it.
Hey, give me one more, Vin.
And then Costner was one of the people that spoke at Scully's farewell in 2016 in Dodger Stadium. Some of the many. Do we have put up the statement we got, or we're going to get that later on? Because we reached out to Costner. He's on the set of Yellowstone now.
Oh, wow.
And we reached out to Bryan Cranston, who gave us, he's shooting all day. He gave us a statement. So we'll play that. We'll show that later. Because Cranston knows Scully and is a diehard Dodger fan. Let's go to Jimmy in San Antonio, one of our favorites. What's up, Jimmy?
Como estas today?
We are doing well. How are you doing?
Just bummed like everybody else. Mm-hmm. I started my broadcasting career in 96, and I was a producer for Brian Anderson, the current commentator for San Antonio Missions, who was owned back then by the O'Malley. So the Dodger connection, of course, was running rampant. And it's like what's the old quote about Vin? He uses words, and his words he can paint like Picasso. Other broadcasters are just painting by the numbers.
That's a good one. I like that
I can't remember who said it, but he's a legend to everybody. You didn't have to be in sports broadcasting to be a fan and know of Vin Scully's accolades. It's just a bummer, but he had a tremendous life. I mean,
94.
You were talking about 67 years. No one's going to go through the historical moments that man has done.
Exactly. And then meet the moment every time, too. Thanks for the call, Jimmy. Greatly appreciate it. Bob Costas is going to join us in hour number three on this very subject matter. And then, of course, the way that the trade deadline finished up, Phillies made quite a burst of activity yesterday towards the end. Today is the first full day of baseball in which we're going to see the fruits of everybody's trade deadline labor. And we'll see how that all plays out. Bob Costas will join us in hour number three. DeForest Buckner is going to join us in hour number two, our next hour, from the Indianapolis Colts. But first up is Davis Love III, who wrote, I believe, on golf.com, quite a tome about defending the PGA Tour with the LIV Tour storm in the gates. And he will be joining us in the next hour of this program to give us his two considerable cents on that. And maybe I'll bring up my glory at Winged Foot as well to him.
What glory is that?
I almost broke 100 there
one day. A little different than what he did.
Yeah.
Well, he won the PGA Championship there.
Right.
And I almost broke 100. Keyword almost.
99?
How close? Oh, no.
105?
I don't know. Maybe I'll.
110?
No, not at all. Not at all. Back here, still here on Peacock. What's the poll question results towards the end of hour number one here, Christopher?
Okay, hour one. Yeah, hit that again. So your favorite of Vin Scully's famous legendary calls to catch Gibson's home run, Buckner from the 86 series, or Hank Aaron's record breaker, 45%, Kirk Gibson's home run.
Okay.
22% Hank Aaron, 17% the catch, and 16% Bill Buckner.
Okay, I got to hit that again, right? Let me hit it here.
Yeah, hit that right now.
Okay. You put it up there? There it is. Okay. I will re-hit that, I guess. I mean, how do you not choose Aaron's record breaker?
Yeah, if you're of a certain age, I think you were around for it. I mean, I guess it's kind of what you were. Although these are all pretty.
Gibson's home run.
These are all pretty dated. You know?
I mean, the catch.
89.
You know the crazy thing about the catch is the radio call was called by Jack Buck.
Yep.
Jack Buck was on the radio call, and Vin Scully was on the television call. And the thing about the catch, Mooch told me this. Eddie DeBartolo, the owner of the 49ers at the time, longtime owner of the 49ers, has the goalpost from Candlestick on his property, I believe in Montana, in a field, and at the exact distance from the goalpost, the actual goalpost, they marked it off between the goalpost and where Dwight Clark made the catch. Dwight Clark is interred there. He is buried on the spot in the exact distance from the same goalpost. That's seminal a moment this was in the history of the 49ers. And then, of course, you can't tell the story of football without this rivalry, without Montana, and without the catch. Called on the radio by Jack Buck.
Wow.
And on television by Vin Scully.
I found some pictures on Twitter of what.
Yeah, I think Mooch told me that. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But that is the case.
Yeah, you can
that
see
that is where Dwight Clark is buried.
Yep.
That is where he is buried. 844-204-RICH, number to dial here on the program. Davis Love III when we come back with you.